wants a ceasefire, but they say no. So what do we do? Also, the most stressed state. Is yours one of them, and why? And this tourist destination has become known as a real crap hole. Is it? We'll talk about it today.
Uncensored, unfiltered, unhinged. It's the Karellcast. Listen daily on your favorite streaming service.
It is the Karellcast. I am Karell. Happy Friday. So glad I am here with you and you are here with me. For those of you keeping track, you know, I don't want the universe to say, here, hold my beer, but I'm feeling better. I'm still having tingling hands and feet. And this morning, my blood pressure dropped to 90 over 60 or two mornings ago. And then yesterday morning, it dropped to 100 over 70 and I got dizzy and no one seemed knows why. But I just tend to believe it has something to do with all of this going on. So we'll see, but I'm here, I'm standing, I'm here, I'm tingly, but I'm alive. And so I hope that, that you're doing okay today as well. You know, we never really know, you know, what's going on inside of somebody. You know, people would see me out like at lunch and they wouldn't know that, you know, inside I'm either terrified or I'm having these weird sensations in my hands or whatever. You know, and I didn't have that on my list of things to talk about today, but I said this on the show earlier that there was an actor on the show Rizzoli and Isles. I've been binging it on Max. And a young actor, African American, very handsome, light eyes. He played Frost. And I liked the character and I liked him. And I guess he was also a Disney star. Some sort of the fabulous jet something or whatever. But his career was going, you know, and he was making money and he's four seasons in and he's doing okay in Hollywood. And then one day he didn't show up at the set and they called for a wellness check and he was found dead. He had committed suicide. And, you know, on the outside, if you saw his life, you would think, well, now, you know, he shouldn't be depressed now. You know, he's got a regular gig. He's four seasons in, so he's making good money. He's secured a retirement with SAG-AFTRA. If you work for 4 years on a TV show, getting that steady paycheck through SAG-AFTRA, you've got your retirement going. You know, you got, and yet he killed himself. And, you know, this does go with the topic of the most stressed states because they came out and Nevada's one of them. And it struck me because as I was telling my friends, we don't know what's going on in someone's life just by looking at them. And even if we're their friend, you know, we really don't know what's going on in their brain, in their mind, you know, what they do when they're alone, you know, what they think about, you know, whether they're just lying around crying or, you know, we don't know. And because of that, because we don't know, we should always err on the side of kindness. Now, I know in today's world, that's a lost message. And I know in today's world, it's just not easy to do. But because people are obtuse today, they're just out there. But inside, I think all of us, in some ways, are struggling. Okay, and I know I'm making a broad generalization here. I'm currently struggling with mortality issues and, you know, aging. I'm 61, about to be 62 this year. And I would like to get off disability and go back to work. And yet all these medical things, you know, just keep happening. And then there's no real job to go back to, not to mention my back is really messed up. And now with the neuropathy happening and everything else. But what I'm saying is we all have our stresses. And as they do these reports about how, you know, young people are more stressed now than ever and they're getting more cancers and more colon cancers and more this and more that. And then you read the reports about, you know, the 10 most stressed states, which are in the South, basically, and Nevada. And they base that on money and access to health care and, you know, all these other criteria. But in all of those criteria, the United States has fallen down to number 27 in the world's most contented countries. We're not we're not one of the happiest countries around. In fact, there are 26 countries happier than us. And I think that's because we are all carrying around right now a heavy burden. You know, Steve Cabral, my dear friend yesterday, I can't, you know, if you'd have told me back at KFI that, and that's before KGO people, we're talking ancient radio history here. If you'd have told me back at KFI that Steve Cabral would turn into someone who literally has saved my life, we were close. We just weren't like that close. But if it weren't for him being here and knowing that he is here and him helping me in the hospital, he came several times a day, got Ember, walked her, came over to my house, got her food, got clothes for me, you know, brought it back to the hospital, sat with me at the hospital, waited for me when I went to get an MRI in the room with Ember so I didn't have to worry about her when I went down. I mean, if he hadn't done that for me, I just don't know how this would have gone. And knowing that he is here in town in case something does happen to me, that he can, you know, come and get Ember. And while I hate that he would leave her at his house for a few hours, you know, because she's never alone, at least I would know that she was safe. So having that person relieves some of my stress, actually. But he mentioned the other day that he hasn't been too happy of late. And I said, well, why? I hope it's not me. And he said, no, it's the country. He's like, you know, he went through a job interview with the Sphere here. And he did 5 interviews, okay, and aced them all. Was top candidate. And then all of a sudden, radio silence. Does this sound familiar to any of you who have been out there job hunting? Just radio silence. Now, he doesn't need a new job. His job loves him. He's making decent money. They recruited him. A headhunter called him. And then all these interviews, and guess what? They suddenly decide they're not going to fill the position at this point. Management up top has changed. They're going to reshuffle it around. And they send him this email that says, oh, if you'd like to play again. Like that was some sort of recreation for him. Taking time out of his day 5 times to talk to 5 different people, only to have them say, oops, our bad. We're not ready to hire anybody yet. You know, and that, it felt good to him because, you know, his skills and his knowledge set and his interview skills got him through and made him a top candidate. But at the same time, you know, it just didn't feel good to suddenly have them say, oops, our bad. We're going to start all over again in a few months. And so you add that in to the fact that he stays politically aware, you know, and he does. And he's not feeling real happy right now. The economy, you know, he makes good money, but he can't really go buy a house right now and, you know, all this other stuff. And I'm sure you can relate to that. That right now, the mood in this country has gotten a lot of people depressed. And it goes back to what I was saying about how you never know what someone is going through. Because now we're all carrying this like double load. We're carrying, I don't mean that in a good way. You know, we're carrying our personal problems. And I don't care who you are. I mean, that actor illustrates. I don't care how rich you are. I don't care how well your life may be going. You've got a problem in some way, shape, or form. There's something bothering you. Either it's a relationship issue with husband, wife, daughter, mother, sister, uncle, aunt, whatever, or it's a work issue, you know, there's someone at work or you're not fulfilled at work or whatever. No one lives a complete, look, Elon Musk has tons of problems and puts them on display. No one lives a perfectly carefree life except a complete and total idiot, you know? So if you're not a complete and total idiot, if you're paying any kind of attention to the world, you know, yesterday I read an article that the polar ice is melting so fast that it's actually changing the rotation of the planet and it's affecting time itself. One second is going to be subtracted over the next year from time because of the way the Earth is moving and tilting because of the distribution of the weight of water. So much that we're doing affects things just way beyond our reach that we don't even comprehend. And if you're paying attention to all this, that the North Atlantic current could stop at any point, which would automatically make the Northern Hemisphere go 40 degrees cooler, kill off the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, if you're paying attention to all that, and then you're paying attention to things like the biggest unholy person in the world outselling a Bible, or, you know, just all the other stuff going on, so you've got all that weight on you. You know, there were people just outraged this last week about Rona McDonald, or whatever her name is, former head of the RNC, being hired by NBC. I mean, they were outraged by it. They were online, oh, I'm never going to watch MSNBC again, and they were mad. They were angry. Something that doesn't really affect their life. They don't have to watch NBC, and yet they're furious. And I think that's one of the reasons everyone's so angry right now. It's because internally, we're carrying too much. You know, it's Friday. You should be thinking, it's Good Friday. Why is it called Good Friday, by the way? How could any religion think it was a good thing that their savior was nailed to an X, bled to death, stabbed by a Roman soldier, pulled down, put into a tomb, and then his body stolen? He did not rise from the dead. Sunday is, you know, El Dia de la Zombia, because anything that rises from the dead is a zombie. But whatever. I mean, I don't know why today is called Good Friday, but it is. I don't think it's a particularly good Friday if your deity or your God is crucified. But I would call it Bad Friday or Dark Friday or, you know, Grim Friday or whatever. But to them, they're calling it Good Friday, but whatever. You know, so I think we're all carrying too much. I think the joy of this weekend and of spring coming and all of that, we're unable to, how do I say this? So many of us are unable to experience great joy right now. We want to. We desperately are trying to. We spend fortunes trying to be happy. But I think it's getting harder and harder and harder. And it is just America in some ways, but in other ways, it's the whole world. And I think if you were to examine your life right now, you would find that you are carrying more than normal. And a lot of it's not being addressed. And when it's not addressed, you end up like that poor actor, you know, doing something horrible. Because we still haven't dealt from COVID. We were basically prisoners for almost 2 years, literally locked up out of fear of dying. And then suddenly they opened the door and said, okay, you can go out now. If you put a dog in a cage for 2 years and made it feel like if it stepped out of that cage, it was going to die, I guarantee you when you open the door in 2 years, it's not going to go out and happily, well-adjustedly join the world again. But they expect you and I to go right back to our lives, right back to work, right back to the economy, right back to all of it. After being a prisoner in our home, where on TV we are seeing makeshift morgues out of freezer trucks next to hospitals, seeing loved ones through windows, not being able to go with loved ones to the hospital, some of us not being able to say our final goodbyes to somebody other than on FaceTime. And we're seeing these stories every night on the news for 2 years. You know, families forced to go to a parking lot and identify a body in a freezer truck. And we're worried that it's going to be us. And then all of a sudden, okay, that's over. We got a shot back out in the world to go. Go make money. Go do this. Go do that. And we never, ever took into account the psychological ramifications of that. We act like humans are impervious to psychological ramifications. Like we're all just supposed to adjust to this ever-changing, fast-moving world. Humans don't. We don't do well with radical change. All right, we got a lot more to discuss today, including the ceasefire, which isn't. Israel doesn't want it. Hamas doesn't want it. The rest of the world wants it. So now what? Now what? We just keep dumping money into it? I mean, what? What happens there? Hey, Carell here, and I'd like to take a moment to thank all the patrons at Patreon. Your support means the absolute world to me and the show. If you'd like to show your support for the crazy endeavors of the Carell cast, then please go to patreon.com/reallycarell. That's patreon.com/reallycarell. And please help get those numbers up by subscribing to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/reallycarell. There's so much great free content there, it's like having a network on your TV, phone, or tablet. All social media is Really Carell, including Threads and Instagram. And don't forget the website that's had it all along, reallycarell.com. Without your support, the show simply doesn't work. So please listen on all streaming services, watch and subscribe on YouTube, and support the show through Patreon at patreon.com/reallycarell. Thanks for almost 30 years of support to the loudest, craziest, most unhinged gay guy and his little dog. And let's keep the party going as long as we can. So the United States voted with a UN resolution for a ceasefire in Israel and Gaza. And this is the first time that we actually joined on board, about the ceasefire. And so now even Israel's main banker is saying, cool it. But neither Israel nor Hamas have agreed to a ceasefire. And so this horrifying suffering in Gaza is going to continue and intensify. We have told Netanyahu, do not attack Rafah. They have nowhere to go. They're up against the sea. You told them to go there. Is he going to attack Rafah? We've got Putin saying that F-16s are going to be shot down, that he won't attack NATO countries, but he will attack F-16s from NATO countries. We've got him lying about the terror attack in his country, saying it was Ukrainians when it wasn't. It was the ISIS, ISIL, I think it's called now, ISIL. And so we have these wars going on, full-scale wars, that we are involved in by proxy, and we don't want them to be going on. We have told Putin, calm down, cool it, stop. We've told Netanyahu, calm down, cool it, stop. And yet neither Putin nor Netanyahu show any signs of calming down, cooling it, stopping. So what? This is one of the things weighing on your mind, by the way. This is one of the reasons you're not as happy as you could be. Because you realize in 24 short hours, a world war could actually begin. There just has to be a few series of events to happen, and then bam, we're suddenly at a world war. And you don't want that. I don't want that. It appears Putin does. It appears Netanyahu doesn't care. And so you've put a lot of energy into Israel and Gaza. You've been online. You've done this. You've gotten in arguments. And now the United States is on the right side saying ceasefire, which I've been saying forever, by the way. And suddenly, the two sides don't want to listen. When two sides go to war. So what do we do? What do we do? You know, this is why I'm not president. Because in my mind, I know clearly what to do. You tell Netanyahu, if you don't cease fire this moment, we will cut off all financial aid to Israel, end of story. We will cut off all weapon sales to Israel, end of story. If you don't stop immediately, we are going to dump all of our resources into helping, rescuing, and feeding the Gazans. We're not going to support Hamas. We're not going to give weapons to Hamas. But we're not going to sell you any more weapons. And we're not going to give you one more penny. Now, that's what I would do. But see, I'm not president. It would piss off a lot of people, too. The same with Vladimir Putin. If I were president of the United States, and I know this would risk world war, but I would call Vladimir Putin and say, stop in the Ukraine. Stop. If you don't stop, we're all going to get together. We're all going to use our special forces, and we are going to kill you, Vladimir. We're not going to attack your country. We're not going to bomb innocent people. We are going to find you and we are going to kill you when you don't see it coming. You will die. That's what I would tell him. Now, I don't know if a head of state can say that to another head of state. I don't know if that's an effective way of governing. Assassination is certainly not a form of government that, you know, world leaders don't call the world leaders and say, if you don't do this, we're going to have you killed. But this guy has proven that he will launch nuclear weapons. He has said out loud, I will bring about the end of life as we know it. He has said that in the last 3 weeks. He is a clear and present danger to the world. And so when someone is a clear and present danger and has nuclear weapons, of course, if we did that, see, this is why I'm not president. Because if we did that, someone even worse could take his place. Someone who would launch nuclear weapons. Or it might unite Russia against the United States and the allies because of what they did, even though they don't like Putin. It might, you know, so that's why we can't do it, because of the other repercussions that would come from such an act. So since we won't tell Israel we're going to cut you off, no money, no weapons until you cease fire, and since we can't tell Vladimir Putin if you keep this up, we're going to take you out, then I don't know how this ends. I'd love to hear from you down below in the comments. I'd love to hear what you have to say about these two things that you're paying for with your tax dollars. But I don't see an end in sight. It's going to be a money suck for the next year, at least, Ukraine and Israel. And I don't see an end in sight. And now we have called for a ceasefire and they're ignoring us in Israel. They're ignoring us. So what do we do? I mean, can we do anything? I've told you what I would do. I would call Netanyahu and say, not another penny, not another dime goes to Israel unless you stop. But you know, I'm not king of the world. So how do you see this playing out? All right, you know, it is the weekend, a long weekend for some people. Some people have today off. And it used to be you would travel on the weekends when we had money and could go afford a hotel or whatever. You can't afford an Airbnb anymore. They charge more for cleaning fees than our resorts over here. There are some people posting online that places are charging $150, $200, $300 for cleaning fees. Screw that. Just do a hotel. But anyway, it used to be, you know, you could go away on the weekend. And San Francisco used to be a tourist destination. Well, according to the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, the terrible reputation that San Francisco has gotten, particularly the downtown area, is killing tourism. I mean, killing it. The numbers are just dismal. They're just way down. Now, San Francisco relied a lot on tourism, Fisherman's Wharf, the downtown area, the cable cars, all of that. And those people aren't coming. Now, I've been countless times when I was on KGO, as you know, and I know that a lot of you listen to me in that area still because of KGO. So I am asking you directly to post down below. Is it the shithole that we are being told it is? Or is all of this overblown? Has the media overblown how bad San Francisco really is? I will tell you, I've had friends that have gone recently and they said they were down on Market and that it was horrifying. That there was drug paraphernalia everywhere. There were people doing drugs in public. So many of the restaurants were either closed or just abandoned. There was office space everywhere available. There's not a ton of people downtown now in like the vibrant time of day, you know, 12 o'clock on a weekday. It's just a ghost town. Is this true? I haven't been, and maybe I should go. Maybe I should go do a show from my old stomping grounds, because we're hearing in the world that San Francisco is basically, and this is a world-class city. San Francisco is spoken of in the same way as New York or Paris or London. And now we have the impression that it's this horror of a city. Don't go. So I ask those of you that are there, is it overblown? I mean, yeah, it has its problems like every other city. But is it really this crap hole now that they've painted it out to be? Yeah, I just read they're starting some exclusive club downtown now, and they're going to let you in based on whether you're a quality person or not. And they say they're not gauging that by money, but whatever. And you have to pay like $3,000 a year and then a monthly fee. And, you know, so you can go and rub elbows with other quality people. Give me a good ass pub any day where there's low quality people. I'd rather have friends in low places, actually. But, you know, so they're trying, you know, to bring back sort of an upscale feel to San Francisco. But is it unfair? In other words, Los Angeles is a shithole. Every time I go to LA or Long Beach now, I just feel horrible. The homeless are everywhere. Encampments are everywhere. Drugs are everywhere. Poverty is everywhere, except the really mega rich places. Anything that's not like behind a gate or mega wealthy is turned into a crap hole in LA. And Long Beach. And if San Francisco is worse than that, then no, I wouldn't want to go. I barely want to go to LA or Long Beach anymore because there's right by where I used to live on 7th Street, the very next corner, there's a guy been living on that corner for 3 years outside of an abandoned gas station. He's got a little tarp. He's got right there. I would have had to pass him every friggin' day and it would have eaten at me every single day. So is San Francisco's, I'm asking all of you that live in that area that listen to me, I know there are many. I have a huge podcast in that area. And so I'm asking you, comment below. Are we getting an accurate picture of San Francisco? Because it's killing tourism. It's taking money out of the city's coffers. Tax revenues are down. Tourism taxes, hotel taxes and fees. All the things that keep San Francisco going. The revenues aren't coming in. And they're not coming in because everyone from vloggers and TikTokers to major media, Good Morning America. Good Morning America was going to do a segment from down on Market in San Francisco. And because they had to set up at 2 a.m, their crew ended up leaving at 3 saying it was just too dangerous. And they did their segment from their hotel saying that they couldn't do it where they had planned because it was just too dicey. Well, that certainly didn't help help anything. So do you think San Francisco's reputation that it now has is deserved? Can it recover? Or do you think it's overblown and it's just the same as every city? I mean, come to Las Vegas. We got thousands of people living in the tunnels under the casinos. The strip smells like a giant pot dispensary. You've got, you go downtown and there's homeless like everywhere. There's homeless sleeping in every park in Las Vegas. You can't go to one park and not see a homeless person. You know, so I don't see how San Francisco could be any worse than Los Angeles or Las Vegas or whatever, but they're saying it is. Portland. So I ask you all, is it sad to you if you're a Bay Area resident? Do you feel sad now? Because the Bay Area, if you're from there, one thing I know is if you're from San Francisco, it's like New York. New Yorkers love New York. And I know that Bay Area residents love the Bay. Do you still? Do you know that up until 4 years ago, under Trump, they just did a poll today of Americans. And 31% of the people that were surveyed said they want to leave America. That number has always been between 4 and 12%. Now it's up to 31%. One third of the people, one out of three people interviewed, now say they want to leave. And this is what they state, that the cities are going to hell, the partisan rancor, people are arguing, it's not a happy place. So let me know in the comments, okay? Do you think San Francisco's bad rep is deserved and can it recover? I am Carell. Be who you want to be. So I don't hurt anybody. We'll see you on Monday if I'm up and about and well, and I'm hoping to be. Until then, stay safe and don't forget to leave your comments down below. Patrons, I love you. And happy Easter to every single person out there.
It's broadcasting from a completely different point of view. Yours. Listen daily to the Carellcast on your favorite streaming service.